The Volume.
Streaming has gotten way too complicated, but you can hack the system with Prime Video. It has everything in one app with one password. See Roadhouse and the National Women's Soccer League, both included with Prime. Plus, you can buy Premier Boxing or stream the NHL and NBA playoffs on Max with the Bleacher Report Sports add-on. Or add Paramount Plus for the Masters on CBS. Prime Video. Restrictions apply. Prime membership required for add-on subscriptions. See Amazon.com/AmazonPrime for details.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
Black Buffalo Zero products are intended for adults age 21 and older who are consumers of comparable products. If you're an adult age 21 and older who dips, I want to tell you about Black Buffalo Zero pouches. What are they made of? Pretty simple. Cured edible green leaves. Food-grade ingredients. Most importantly, there's no nicotine or tobacco. All proudly made here in the U.S. So if you're 21 and older and want to learn more about Black Buffalo Zero, head over to blackbuffalozero.com to learn more. You can buy their pouch online, ship directly to most states. Black Buffalo Zero, zero nicotine, zero tobacco, 100% ritual.
Career Builder is made for people who have that thing. You know, those superpowers that make you good at your job, the skills you bring to work. And Career Builder knows those skills make you right for other jobs too. Higher paying jobs with benefits. Jobs you never thought of trying. Are you a people person? Work from home as a customer service rep? Are you organized and like driving? Become a delivery driver. You have the skills it takes, and CareerBuilder.com has the jobs to get you hired fast. Visit CareerBuilder.com. Millions of Americans are getting back to work. Career Builder calls it the Great Rehire. And we want to help you get the best jobs before everyone else. Career Builder gives you the competitive edge to get the job you want, at the salary you want, with the benefits you want. We even send job alerts, so your perfect job lands right in your inbox. Go to CareerBuilder.com today, or get left with whatever jobs are left. Find your next job fast at CareerBuilder.com.
We just can't seem to catch a break, huh? So many rough fire seasons. But we made it through, and now there's another risk. All that charred soil and burnt vegetation can lead to floods and mud flow. I know, but you've got this too. And one way to get this is to get this, flood insurance. There's no rest for the West, but with flood insurance, you can rest assured that you're ready for whatever else nature throws at you. Protect the life you've built at floodsmart.gov/wildfires.
Boxing with Chris Mannix is presented by FanDuel Sportsbook. There is no better place to make every moment more during the Super Bowl than with FanDuel. And new users can bet $5 to win $280 in cash on either team to win. I am going with Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals. I am betting this Cinderella ride has one more win in it. On FanDuel, there are tons of great odds for every game. Awesome new and existing user promotions. It is America's number one sports book. It's easy to use, it's safe and secure, and now winnings are delivered in as quick as 2 hours. It's fun to combine multiple bets from the same game into a same game parlay. Discover the most popular SGPs each day right when you log in. If you are new, download the FanDuel Sportsbook app to get started. Sign up with promo code BOXING so they know that I sent you.
This is Boxing with Chris Mannix.
Oh, somebody punch him in the face.
Anthony Joshua is a composed and ferocious finisher. Watch this.
Andy Ruiz is the heavyweight champion.
Hosted by SI's Chris Mannix.
That was my moment.
Now with interviews, analysis, and everything going on in the world of boxing.
When you have talent, you are given another chance.
Here's Chris Mannix.
All right, Keith Idek is here, senior writer, BoxingScene.com, coming to you live from New Jersey, I assume. His green New York Jets t-shirt. I don't know what he's wearing.
It's just a Nike sweatshirt. No Jets.
I just assume Jersey Jets.
I am a Jets fan, but
basking
no Jets
in incompetence.
Today.
That's the way it is.
Zach Wilson era underway. Ready to go.
Zach Wilson era, yes. Well, could at least shoot out the Giants right now. I guess that you could be worse. At this
Absolutely.
Point.
Yep.
All right, Keith, let's jump in to some of the news this week. I want to start with Canelo Alvarez, who may be at least trending towards a decision for his next fight. Our friend Mike Coppinger over at ESPN first reported that Canelo was closing in on a two-fight deal with Matchroom Boxing that would see him face Dmitry Bivol for Bivol's 175-pound title. That fight would be in May. And then in September, the big one, a third fight against Gennady Golovkin, completing one of the better rivalries of this recent era. Eddie Reynoso, the trainer for Canelo Alvarez, the manager for Canelo Alvarez, he came out on social media on Thursday and said, look, we've got offers. We're sifting through them. Nothing is done yet. But, you know, I kind of hear a lot of the same things, Keith. I know you reported a little bit on it on Boxing Scene about, you know, Canelo strongly leaning towards this deal. It seems like, at least as we record this, this is the direction he's going. What do you think of it? And are you surprised that this is the path he seems to be choosing?
Not necessarily just because of the money, Chris. I was in Las Vegas over the weekend for the Keith Thurman, Mario Barrios extravaganza at Mandalay Bay. And I started hearing that morning that DAZN had upped its offer from two fight $80 million guarantee toward a deal that could ultimately be worth $100 million for two fights, which obviously has some contingencies to it. But that's an enormous amount of money, obviously. I guess from the other side of it, from the Showtime PBC side of it, they can offer a lot of money as well. And for the Jermall Charlo fight, his guarantee would be roughly $45 million, more than he would have made or more than he did make for the Caleb Plant fight. So they're offering him a lot of money for the one fight. I guess ultimately what it depends upon for Canelo Alvarez is, does he want to fight Triple G a third time? And of course, the way they've moved forward here in their careers, you would have to heavily favor Canelo Alvarez in a third fight against Triple G. This seems to be something that the DAZN executives are hell-bent on making happen, because it has been the fight that they've been pursuing since they launched the streaming service 3.5 years ago, as you well know, Chris. They still want the fight. It's still a marketable fight. It's not as big as it was when they signed both fighters, in the fall of 2018 and then in the spring of 2019. It's lost some of its luster just because they've headed in different directions. Gennady Golovkin will be 40 years old in April. He barely has fought in the last 2 years. So it's lost some of its luster. It's still a big fight. It's still a marketable fight. I guess what it depends upon for Canelo Alvarez, because the money isn't going to be that different for fighting Dmitry Bivol for a light heavyweight title, and he's already been a light heavyweight champion, and Gennady Golovkin. Or does he want to fight Jermall Charlo and probably David Benavidez? Does he want that more? Does he view that as more important for his legacy? Because we both know that he really has a strong dislike for Golovkin. He does not want Golovkin to benefit financially from his superstardom. So that might ultimately be a factor in this as well, because as you mentioned before, that Mike Coppinger, our good old pal over there at ESPN, wrote yesterday that he was nearing a deal, and he's seriously considering it, but he's also considering the PBC Showtime deal. And again, it's just ultimately going to depend on which fights he sees as more important to his legacy. The Bivol fight is a challenging fight. It just doesn't have the, to me anyway, I think the Charlo fight is more marketable. I'm not saying that it's an easier fight or a harder fight or whatever. Obviously, Charlo has to go up from 160 to 168. But I just think the fight is more marketable in the sense that Dmitry Bivol is, for all intents and purposes, has disappeared over the last couple of years. Frankly, he's fighting at 11 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast from Russia, and people aren't seeing his fights. And he struggled somewhat in his fight against Craig Richards, and fighters often have a tendency to fight up and down to their levels of competition. I'm not saying he's not a better fighter than Craig Richards. He is. But if Canelo Alvarez had struggled with a fighter at the level of Craig Richards, what would they be saying about Canelo Alvarez? They certainly wouldn't be saying that he could beat the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world. And yesterday, a lot of people were trying to tell me that Dmitry Bivol is the toughest of those four fights that have been proposed by both Showtime and DAZN. I don't see that. I see Canelo beating Dmitry Bivol, I wouldn't say easily, but certainly convincingly.
Yeah, I think I'm a little surprised that Canelo has not elected to split the baby. To your point, I believe DAZN executives are hell-bent on making the Golovkin fight happen. And if Golovkin faces Ryota Murata at some point over the next couple of months and looks great in that fight, which you and I both know he's fully capable of, Murata is not very good and is very capable of being knocked out, has been even more inactive than Golovkin, if you can believe that, over the last few years.
Yeah.
If he looked great against Murata, suddenly had two pieces of the 160-pound championship, it wouldn't have regained all the momentum it lost, but it would have regained some of it and made that fight marketable in September. I do think Canelo is over the "I don't want Golovkin to get a paycheck" part of it. Now, I base that on, before the pandemic hit, there were plans to have Canelo go against Billy Joe Saunders in May and face Gennady Golovkin in September. That was very much in talks, and there was a strong belief on the DAZN side that Canelo was willing to do it. So I don't think there's definitely still a lot of personal animosity there. I don't think it's blocking anything from happening. It hasn't been the case in some time now. The Bivol, though, and I don't have any real inside information on this, but I'm guessing Eddie Hearn probably sold him on saying, look, you go up to 175, you beat Dmitry Bivol, all of a sudden you got one piece of the title, you let Joe Smith and Archer Beterbiev figure out the other three pieces, and then when you're ready, you go up to 175, and in one more fight, you can fight for the undisputed light heavyweight championship. And as you said, Canelo is concerned about legacy, does think about these legacy-defining fights. To become the undisputed light heavyweight champion after just two fights, one of which he should be a big favorite going into, that's a pretty good pathway, especially if the money is fairly equal.
That makes perfect sense, Chris, because like you said, he could then become an undisputed champion potentially in another division. Obviously, that from DAZN's perspective, they would have the inside track toward getting that fight, because one thing that I know unequivocally that is true is that Top Rank under no circumstances is going to pay for Canelo Alvarez to fight Artur Beterbiev for the kind of money that Canelo Alvarez, they've literally told me that, so that will not happen on ESPN or ESPN Plus. So DAZN would then have a chance to have Canelo fight Bivol, Golovkin, and Beterbiev, and three successive fights, which is a pretty nice run there for Canelo. So that makes perfect sense in terms of that being the blueprint that Eddie laid out for him. But on the flip side, I would say, on one hand, Canelo could look at the Golovkin fight as a fight that is very winnable for him now, and a fight that he should and probably will win convincingly, because Golovkin will be 40 years old and has been very inactive by the time, obviously, he fought Murata, but he has not been active. And the worst thing for an older fighter is inactivity. So he's got a very bad combination of numbers working against him heading into a third Canelo fight. And then from Canelo's perspective, do you want to be looked at like you were? Now, it would be kind of silly to call Gennady Golovkin a cherry pick. It's not a cherry pick, but would you want to be criticized for taking what would be perceived at least as an easier fight than David Benavidez? Now, David Benavidez certainly has not accomplished anything close to what Gennady Golovkin has accomplished in his career. I'm not necessarily saying that it's going to be a much harder fight, but he's a much younger fighter. He's bigger. He's been a super middleweight champion. In some ways, Canelo picked up one of the titles because of David Benavidez's stupidity, immaturity, however you want to frame it. He's lost the same title twice without losing a fight. Some people might perceive, even though Canelo is the undisputed 168-pound champion, people might perceive David Benavidez to be more of the real WBC champion than Canelo Alvarez. So I could see people criticizing him for not fighting the younger, bigger, hungrier fighter if he were to take that route of fighting Bivol and fighting Golovkin.
Yeah, look, I get that. But perceived by who is how I would respond. Perceived by the people deep in the weeds in boxing, people like us that know that Gennady Golovkin is not the fighter he was in 2017 and 2018 when he had those great fights against Canelo. I can promise you, Keith, the average fan has no idea that Golovkin's been inactive the last 2 years and that he's fallen off a little bit. If they see him knock out Ryota Murata, the average casual fan is going to be like, oh, third fight between Canelo and Triple G, completing a rivalry. They're not going to know. It's like, in a way, it's comparable to like Mayweather versus McGregor. You and I and people that know combat sports know it's ridiculous. It's absurd to think that Conor McGregor could win a fight like that. But the name recognition, the star power, that's what drives interest. That's what drives pay-per-view. So, yeah, I guess, like, you know, there'll be sections of Twitter that will go after Canelo Alvarez for refusing to fight David Benavidez. He can wave at them on his way to the bank to cash the massive check that's going to come with fighting Gennady Golovkin. The two fights he did against Golovkin in 17 and 18 did well over a million pay-per-view buys. It's a new landscape, of course, and it would undoubtedly be a DAZN pay-per-view, which is a new thing in and of itself, but there's no reason to believe that if Golovkin is successful and Canelo is successful the next few months, that it won't at least approach that number. So, like, I understand he'll get tweaked by the, you know, the angry, angry boxing fan that demand David Benavidez, but that number is grossly outnumbered by the casual fans that would be all on board with that fight.
While that's true, Chris, I would say, is it more important, forget about me, forget about you, the people on Twitter, anybody else, what does it mean to Canelo Alvarez? Because he's already got more money than him and his children could ever spend. So at this point, what's really the difference? And he would make an enormous amount of money for fighting Benavidez and Charlo. So is it important to him? And I'm not saying his legacy isn't important to him based on how he's gone about his business so far, but he's also been a smart matchmaker, let's be honest. He has. Not in the case of fighting Arislandi Lara. That was a bad idea. But for the most part, he's been a smart matchmaker. So if he's going to show the type of ambition that he did when he was younger, the path to take would be Charlo and David Benavidez. If he's going to take a little, and I don't mean it's a safe route because Dmitry Bivol can fight, and Gennady Golovkin is still a big puncher and has a lot to prove and wants to avenge his only defeat. So that's not an easy fight either. But I think if he really wanted to show ambition over cashing the most amount of money, cashing in on the most amount of money, he would go the Charlo Benavidez route. But like you said, commercially, probably the Triple G fight is the biggest of the four.
Yeah, but do you really think that Charlo is a more dangerous fight than Bivol?
Dangerous maybe, yeah, because I haven't seen no evidence that Dmitry Bivol is a puncher. I haven't seen it.
Well, not in years.
He's a boxer. He's a boxer, and he would be going up against a guy who has had maybe the most reliable chin of this era. So it's going to be a matter of whether he can outbox Canelo Alvarez, and maybe he can. But I honestly, whereas I was told repeatedly yesterday on Twitter, and who really cares what half of these people are saying, but the opinion of a lot of them really was that Dmitry Bivol is the toughest of those four fights. You might argue that it's the easiest of those four fights, to be honest with you, or the safest.
I don't know. I look, we can discuss Charlo in a minute, but, like, you know, I've seen no evidence in the last 5 years that he's this
dangerous guy. Like,
I'm not saying he's a murderous puncher or anything, but he can punch. He's obviously a bigger, they're all bigger than Canelo, especially as he moved up in weight, of course, but he's a much taller fighter than Canelo. And I think, you know, to some extent, Jermall Charlo is tired of hearing that he's afraid to fight this guy, he's afraid to fight that guy, and this is his career defining moment. So I think he would be as up for this fight as you possibly could be. That probably won't be enough to beat Canelo Alvarez, but I would expect that if Jermall Charlo were to get this opportunity, he would bring it that night. Whatever he's got, he'd bring it.
Let me kick it to Golovkin there. Not to say Golovkin's better than Benavidez at this point, but in terms of legacy, and maybe not ambition, but certainly in terms of legacy, like, can you say right now who was of the 20 of the last 10 years, who was the better of the two based on those two fights? Can we say definitively who was better? Like, I don't think so. To me, Golovkin won the first fight. To most people believe that. The second fight, all credit to Canelo. He won a close decision. Mm-hmm. I had it the other way, but I don't care. Like, I had 114, 113 for Golovkin. If it's like that, that's the way it goes. Like, there's been no finality to this rivalry. And you can say it's been overripe, it's overripened, rather, because of the number of years that have passed and the age of Golovkin, who would be 40 years old when that fight took place. But I think Canelo's legacy would be enhanced or burnished if he can definitively win a fight against his longtime rival.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, I couldn't really put it better than you just put it. That's a very valid point. And he would get some satisfaction, or more than some satisfaction, of definitively beating Gennady Golovkin, maybe dragging Gennady Golovkin into the later rounds of the fight where an older fighter would have a difficult time, beating him up maybe, carrying him for a few rounds, torturing him to some degree. And I'm not saying that will happen, but he's 40 years old. And we still don't really know with any certainty how much the Derevyanchenko fight took out of him. Because the one fight that he has had since then was a whitewash. I mean, that proved nothing. He was in the ring with a mandatory challenger who did not belong in the ring with him. He beat him up the way that he was supposed to beat him up. So what happens when he's actually in the ring with a guy of Canelo Alvarez's caliber? Because Ryota Murata is not that. He has lost to Hassan Nandam and Rob Brandt. And because the WBA is an utterly ridiculous organization, Murata has a one of their multiple titles. So yippee. You can call it a unification fight. Knock yourself out. Who cares? But the bottom line is, I can't emphasize enough, this person has lost to Hassan Nandam and Rob Brandt, who's a very nice person. And he came back to win. He came back to avenge both of those losses, especially against Rob Brandt, in a very convincing way. So maybe he's just the kind of guy who doesn't get up for certain opponents, but he's going to get destroyed by Gennady Golovkin, point blank.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. All right, I want to say one thing about Jermall Charlo. If he doesn't get this fight, it's your fault. It just is. Like, you know, because over the last few years, if Jermall Charlo had fought real fights, if he had fought Demetrius Andrade and won, maybe at that point would have gotten the attention of Golovkin with two titles around your waist. Just fought, had been more active, had been seeking out better competition, facing the best. I think that would have created more of a mandate for Canelo to look at him and say, that's a bigger fight. Even if it's not for a light heavyweight title, that's a bigger fight. But he has gone, Keith, 5 years where his best win is against a well past his prime Sergey Derevyanchenko. So I look at it as saying, like, it's...
I don't know if he was a well past his prime Sergey Derevyanchenko. It's the same Sergey Derevyanchenko that you thought and I thought beat Gennady Golovkin.
Well, that was before, though. I mean, we just talked about what did Derevyanchenko take out of Golovkin. Well, Golovkin took something out of him.
Right, but now we're saying that Golovkin is still the best fight for Canelo, so we can't have it both ways.
Well, no. It's not. I'm not convinced. No. Look, if you want to rank the best and most difficult fights for Canelo, I'd probably put Benavidez at the top of the list. I think he's really skilled, got some pop, natural 168-pounder. I think Bivol's a tougher fight than Charlo. It's not a huge gap. I just think Golovkin's more relevant, and Charlo missed his opportunity to become more relevant over the last few years.
I understand what you're saying about his level of opposition, but I would say this in terms of making it mandated. It was mandated, and Canelo somehow, they somehow made up some ridiculous franchise championship, when it was time for Canelo Alvarez to make a mandatory defense against Jermall Charlo, and Jermall Charlo was supposed to get the opportunity to prove his worth against Canelo Alvarez, what happened? They made up some absurd designation that was not supposed to be transferred. And look where we are, you know, 2 years, yep. 2.5 years later, with what wasn't supposed to be transferable and blah, 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 blah. Look, I'm not saying that Canelo Alvarez is afraid to fight Jermall Charlo or he's afraid to fight anyone, but that fight could have and probably should have happened by now. And now he's being offered a $45 million guarantee for it to happen, and it's still not happening. So I don't know how. While you're right, I think about the level of Jermall Charlo's opposition not being great. I don't know that this falls on him at this moment when there's a $45 million guarantee hanging in the balance and he's going to fight Dmitry Bivol in what, at the very least, is a less sexy fight, I guess we would.
Much less marketable than what Jermall Charlo would be. There's no question about that. I just think if there was like a way to push Jermall Charlo ahead a little bit, maybe give Canelo more reason, fighting bigger fights over the last couple of years as opposed to fighting once a year and most recently against a no-hoper, Juan Macias Montiel, and then sitting out the rest of the year. Meanwhile, and not to say Canelo was going to fight Demetrius Andrade, but Andrade banging his drum every 15 minutes to try to get Charlo in the ring with him. I think that hurt him. I do think that hurt him in these negotiations.
And he struggled against Montiel, who turned out to be a tougher opponent than anyone thought.
Yeah, and Montiel, who I didn't think had any chance after watching Munguia pancake him a little while back, but that's a story. Let me ask you, though, about Charlo. Like, if it doesn't go his way, where does he go? Like, he's been hanging his hat on getting this fight. Now, you and I both know there are great options at BBC for Jermall Charlo.
Yeah.
Caleb Plant is a big fight. David Benavidez is a big fight. Not so much at middleweight right now, but it sounds like he's ready to make the jump up to 168 pounds. Like, where does he go? I mean, are those fights affordable for PBC at this point? Because that often is the issue with making these fights happen between two A-list guys.
I would say that based on what Jermall Charlo said over the past year or so, he's not terribly interested in fighting David Benavidez because he gave some rather silly explanations as to why they shouldn't fight, to be honest. But one fight I think maybe to keep an eye on is, first it would be Saturday because it depends how Daniel Jacobs looks against John Ryder. If he looks like some semblance of the Daniel Jacobs that we've known over the last 5 years, as opposed to who we saw probably lose to Gabe Rosado, Daniel Jacobs against Jermall Charlo is still a marketable fight. Maybe too expensive, to your point, Chris, as it relates to the PBC Showtime or even Fox side of it. But that might be the one, because I think that would be a fight that Jermall Charlo might want more than the Benavidez. And I'm not saying he's scared to fight Benavidez. I'm just saying from a business perspective, what might make more sense is fighting the older fighter who has more of an established resume, fan base, et cetera, and who potentially at least could be coming off a good performance against John Ryder. Now, we won't know that until Saturday, but if he looks good against John Ryder, suddenly Daniel Jacobs against Jermall Charlo might come into play again if Canelo Alvarez does what we think he's leaning toward doing, fighting Bivol and Golovkin.
That's a tremendous fight, especially if Jacobs looks good against Ryder. And I talked to Jacobs. He's coming up later on this podcast. He's saying all the right things. Being back with Andre Rougeir is great. Training camp was great. Mentally, he's sharp. Ryder's a very tricky opponent, so we'll see. He's looked good against top-level competition. But that would be an excellent fight. But I do worry about the economics, Keith, because you know when we talk about these guys, like you know Jacobs would want, I don't know, several million dollars at least. You know, Charlo would want several million dollars. The same thing with Benavidez and with Plant. Mm-hmm. It's why oftentimes we see these guys, when they're not taking on the Canelos of the world, fight second tier type of opponents. It's not because they don't want those fights; it's the economics don't allow for it at this point. So I hope so because you know if like the last thing I want to see, Keith, honestly, is like an announcement of Jermall Charlo, Anthony Durrell. Like I don't need that in my life right now. No disrespect to Anthony Durrell. Great guy, coming off a big win himself in his last fight, but That feels like the obvious answer for Jermall Charlo, and I don't know if I want to see it.
Well, you may have just spoken it into existence, so it's your fault if it happens.
That's entirely my fault. All right, but moving back to a fight that you saw this past weekend. I believe you called it the extravaganza with Keith Thurman out in Las Vegas. He goes the distance, beats Mario Barrios convincingly. How did you think he looked, and what do you think the future is for Keith Thurman?
I think he kind of looked like Keith Thurman looked in every other fight in recent years, except for the Pacquiao fight, because he was knocked down in the first round, was playing catch up, made the fight competitive, got hurt with a body shot. But it kind of looked like a lot of Keith Thurman fights. He went after his opponent, started off strong, tried to some degree to get him out of there, did not do that, turned it into somewhat of a track meet for several rounds, got caught with a body shot in the later rounds that affected him, and went on to win the fight. So it resembled a lot of Keith Thurman fights in recent years. Mario Barrios was not a huge underdog going into that fight because Keith Thurman had not fought in so long. He hadn't fought in 2.5 years. Look, ring rust certainly had something to do with what happened the other night. I think he won convincingly. I thought Steve Weisfeld's scorecard of 117-111 was probably the fairest of the three. I thought, it was a 9-3 type of fight, but nothing resembling an embarrassing performance for Mario Barrios, who moved up to welterweight for the first time and is a very, very tough guy. And he's always going to be in good action fights and everything because he's tough. He's just not nearly as good as the guys at the top level, which we've now seen probably in three of his past four fights. But it was a reasonably entertaining fight. Of course, had no business being the headliner of a $75 pay-per-view show or a $7.50 pay-per-view show. It just didn't belong on pay-per-view. The buy rate reflected that. Keith Thurman's guarantee for Saturday night was $3 million. So, look, I hope that moving forward, as it relates to the PBC-Fox partnership, that we are not going to see pay-per-views that don't belong on pay-per-view every 6 weeks, because it's just not a sustainable business model. And it's going to turn off what seems like an ever dwindling fan base. Don't continue to try to squeeze every nickel out of people who frankly have been loyal to this sport and have stuck with it through thick and thin. Now, a lot of people steal the pay-per-views, which is really an insult to the fighters who are, risking their lives, because you're taking money off their family's table, frankly, by doing that. But they would justify it by saying, well, look, if you're going to come at us for $75 or $70 or whatever it might be every 5 or 6 weeks, well, I'm not going to build that into my family's budget. So it kind of is what it is. So that's how they fight back. Or you could fight back by not watching it, I guess. But just in general, I just hope that this is not the path that we take, as opposed to getting fights on free television. And I wrote this column for Boxing Scene on last Friday. It's just, now I understand.
You're a little salty in that column, Keith. A little salty in that column.
Well, I'm a little salty in general in my old age, I suppose. But look, somebody, we got to say it. I mean, Chris, this is crazy. And when we can, let's get into DAZN now doing pay-per-view fights. I mean, because that's a problem too that needs to be addressed by them. But as it relates to PBC and Fox, I understand why the fight was on pay-per-view, because look, Keith Thurman expects a certain level of compensation, and Fox slashed its PBC's budget for the fourth year when they picked up the fourth year option. So that type of fight is not something you can put on Fox. That's where it belonged. But you don't, economically, it didn't work because you don't have the level of license fee that you needed to put that fight on Fox. So I get that, but you're going to have to figure it out some way, whether that's the fighters taking somewhat of a haircut, because if we learned anything, if Keith Thurman was taught any sort of lesson on Saturday night, is that he's not an A-side pay-per-view fighter against anybody you throw in the ring with him. It's just not. Like, he can be on pay-per-view if he winds up fighting Errol Spence Jr. or if your Dennis Ugas pulls off an upset on April 16th. Yeah, then he can be on pay-per-view. If he wants to, as he said to me after the fight, when I asked him in the post-fight press conference, he said he's interested in fighting Terrence Crawford. Interested in fighting Terrence Crawford and being willing to fight Terrence Crawford are two different things, obviously. But that fight would be on pay-per-view too. But you can't throw him in there with just any old buddy, every 6 months, just because Keith Thurman wants to be paid X.
Yeah, you mentioned too, DAZN pay-per-view. I just don't know enough about it yet and what they're going to do. Like, you know, are there going to be substantial discounts for subscribers?
Yeah,
There should be, of course. They should make it more palatable for subscribers to do it. That you know, I'll reserve judgment until I see what it actually looks like for the people that are having to buy it. Because, yeah, you shouldn't have people paying $100 in a subscription and $80-whatever dollars for a Canelo pay-per-view. There's got to be a middle ground there on something.
Chris, I think what they need to do from a public relations standpoint, honestly, is to show some honesty, to be as clear about it as possible, right? Because, look, I understand they were ambitious when they broke into the market in 2018. They were bold about it, and they said, death to pay-per-view, and we're going to change everything. They found out the hard way that this business has existed the way that it has for decades, and no one, no matter how smart or how much money they think they have, is going to come in and change it just because they say so. So what I think they should do as a maybe mea culpa type of thing, and maybe as a gesture of goodwill to the people who have stuck with DAZN for the past 3.5 years, is say, hey, look, yes, we are going to give you some sort of discount if you've been a subscriber. You won't have to pay whatever the full, whether that full price is $75 or $80 or whatever it might be for the type of fight where they're paying those types of purses. Say, hey, we'll give you an extra 5 months or 6 months, whatever they come up with. But also, the front men for DAZN have to, I think, address publicly the fact that they said, we never will do pay-per-view shows. And then once they realize the economic reality that they were faced with, they have to do it. I tweeted this yesterday or the day before, whatever it was, to some guy on Twitter. I said, it's the only way. And the guy took offense to it, saying, it's not the only. I said, you're missing my point. When fighters' financial expectations are what Canelo Alvarez's expectations are, and he's earned every bit of that, you can't pay him any other way than to have the fight available at a higher price point than $10 per month or $20 per month or whatever it is. It's, you can't make it work financially without doing it on pay-per-view. That's again what they, you know, maybe Joe is a very smart guy. And Joe Markowski is a very smart guy. He gets the economics of it and everything. Eddie's a smart guy as well. You know, charismatic and all that kind of stuff. But I do think maybe here it's time to just come maybe a little bit, I don't want to say hat in hand. I'm not trying to be melodramatic about it, but just say we made a mistake. We underestimated how difficult this task was going to be. And maybe we said some things that we should not have said. And we now realize through trial and error that this is the way we're going to have to go about it. Not every fight's not going to be on pay-per-view. You're still going to get some good fights, you know, including lower profile fighters. Like Saturday night's a good example. People enjoyed the Bam Rodriguez-Carlos Quadras fight. Based on the traffic on our website and the response on our website, I would say they enjoyed it more than the Keith Thurman-Mario Barrios fight, despite that those are higher profile guys. So if you can give people that type of value for their money in between doing maybe 2 or 3 of those types of pay-per-views per year, it'll be palatable even for the people who are furious that they signed up for your subscription plan thinking that you were going to deliver those types of fights for that low amount of money, and then you realized you could not.
Yeah, I think the key to your point is satisfying subscribers, and maybe more importantly, using pay-per-view judiciously. Like, that's the big... Pay-per-view is not a problem in boxing when it's used correctly. Like, nobody complained about Fury Wilder. Nobody complained about Plant Canelo. Like, when it's a high-caliber fight, people do not mind paying for it. Whatever Canelo fights, really, it's pay-per-view quality. It's everything else. It's when you get into the weeds a little bit, and if it's borderline and you pick pay-per-view, that's the problem on any platform that's out there right now.
Yeah, no, I agree, Chris. And the other thing is, I understand sometimes it's out of necessity, but don't continue going to that well of putting fights on pay-per-view that don't belong there, because I think sometimes people with it, and I think this is, some of the people at DAZN anyway are guilty of this because they're not really boxing people. They kind of think that, and it's not only DAZN, it's on other platforms as well. But you know, we've already sold the loyalists on whatever we're doing, because those same hundreds of thousands of people are going to buy whatever we throw at them. That's not necessarily true. because the boxing fan base was obviously much bigger once upon a time than it is now. So that's evidence that if you keep pissing people off and keep treating them or mistreating them along the way, you're going to lose some of them. So don't take them for granted and think that they're just always going to stick around, because there are various entertainment options for people. And while I think, you know, to some extent there will always be enough people that watch, that like watch, you know, watching people beat the crap out of each other is really the best way to put it. There will be enough of those people, but if it gets down to the level where it way lower than it is now, the sport cannot survive. So don't take those people for granted, I guess is what I'm saying. And again, just come to them and say, hey, look, this is the way we're going to do it for these two Canelo fights. He is Canelo Alvarez after all. We're sorry about not delivering on our promise. Don't just gloss over it, because that will infuriate people.
Yeah. To put a pin in Keith Thurman, I'll put it this way. Do you believe he fights again in 2022?
I do. You know, he actually said the other night that because he's been so inactive, he didn't fight for 2.5 years from the Pacquiao fight until the Barrios fight. And he did have hand surgery and then the pandemic. So that's part of why he didn't fight for 2.5 years. But he did say, look, what I think is going to happen, Chris, I think it's set up perfectly for this. Errol Spence Jr. and Yordanis Ugas are obviously fighting on April 16th on Showtime pay-per-view. I think Keith Thurman will fight the winner of that fight. Now, whether he fights again in between there, I'm not entirely sure. But from Errol Spence's perspective, and Yordanis Ugas is obviously a better fighter than any of us realized over the last few years. And he's not going to be an easy fight or an easy out for Errol Spence. But Errol Spence is favored to win the fight. If he does win the fight and he's not quite ready to fight Crawford, he could go fight Keith Thurman. And that's a sellable pay-per-view fight in the sense that they've been rivals for a long time. People have wanted to see the fight. Now, I think Keith Thurman is a diminished fighter, and Errol Spence would beat him rather convincingly if they did fight, but at least it's a pay-per-view fight that they can market because they've had this rivalry for several years. And then the winner, which presumably would be Errol Spence, might then go and fight Terrence Crawford, assuming Crawford doesn't get picked off by someone along the way.
Yeah, I was going to say, Keith, if you're predicting Keith Thurman versus Spence, if he beats Ugas, that means we do not get Crawford versus Spence in 2022, which, to your point about pissing people off, that would piss some people off. I think that would get to
yeah,
you.
No,
Top Rank's no longer the obstacle here.
They're not, but the obstacle is that Top Rank paid Terrence, despite what Terrence Crawford seems to think in this lawsuit. Top Rank compensated him very well, overpaid him for the types, mostly for the types of fights that he took. Certainly not Sean Porter. That was a real fight, of course. And Kavalauskas was a tougher fight than people realize also. But he was overpaid probably based on what his market value was for the types of opponents that he beat. He's starting to realize that now as he's out on the open market and trying to get those types of paydays against who exactly? Because if you don't sign with PBC, the three fighters that he mentions first and foremost that he wants to fight when you ask him, I've heard him say it, is Keith Thurman, Errol Spence, or Yordanis Ugas. Now, those two guys are fighting each other, so that's going to eliminate one of them. So let's just say it's Keith Thurman and Errol Spence. Well, you have to affiliate yourself in some way with PBC to make those fights happen. The Josh Taylor fight is a possibility as well. You know, if Josh Taylor beats Jack Catterall, there's not much left for Josh Taylor to accomplish in the 140-pound division. Catterall's a mandatory challenger. He could move up to 147, and there would be great interest in Josh Taylor fighting Terrence Crawford, particularly in the UK. Crawford has gone to the UK before, and I think he would do it again. So that is an option for him. But beyond that, there's not really much out there for him if he doesn't affiliate himself with the PBC. And to answer your question, Chris, what you mentioned earlier, I don't think we're going to see Spence Crawford in 2022. Hopefully we'll see it in 2023. But, you know, Terrence Crawford's going to be 35 years old in September, and Errol Spence is going to be 32 in March. So they're, you know, they're getting toward the back end of it. Well, Crawford's already in the back end of his prime, and Spence not only is getting toward the back end of his prime, but he's had a lot of obvious problems outside of the ring the last 2 years or 3 years, you know, in the car accident and the retina surgery and everything. So I don't know what to expect from him on April 16th either.
Yeah, no question. That's going to be a very interesting fight that we'll talk more about as we get closer. Last thing for you, and this is kind of a very inside baseball type of topic, but it always interests me given that PBC has got a dual relationship with Fox and with Showtime. You've had Showtime over the last few months pick up the marquee fights. They got Canelo versus Plant. They got Gervonta Davis's last fight, even though that wasn't a roaring success. And now they are going to distribute Spence against Ugas. It's just like it keeps tilting, Keith. The windmill keeps tilting in different directions. For a while, Fox was getting the lion's share of the top-level pay-per-views. Now it seems Showtime is absorbing more of them. What do you make of that and how that impacts the dynamic between PBC and its two broadcast partners?
What I think it indicates is that if I had to guess, my educated guess would be that Fox and PBC don't do business any further beyond this fourth year of the four-year deal that they signed in 2018. I know that Al Heyman was not happy with the terms of the fourth year because there were some contractual clauses that were numbers that they had to meet to get a certain amount of money out of Fox for the fourth year. And they did not meet those numbers in 2021. So for 2022, the license fees are lower. There are less fights on Fox. There will be fights on Fox, particularly once college basketball season is over. They will do some fights on Fox after their baseball games and such. But there are going to be less fights on Fox overall, less fights on FS1 overall, and they're working with less money as license fees. So that's why you're seeing the lower quality of fights on Fox than we once saw. You know, we once saw Jermell Charlo against Tony Harrison, which was a big upset. Then we saw their rematch on Fox. We saw Jarrett Hurd and Julian Williams, which also was a big upset. So we've seen some really good fights on Fox during the course of this deal. We're now seeing, I wrote this again last Friday, we're kind of seeing like Showbox level fights on Fox. Not necessarily the ones that lead into the pay-per-views, but certainly the ones that stand alone. You know, Vito Melnicki headlined a Fox show on Christmas night. You know, you're seeing those, and there's nothing wrong with those kinds of fights, but do they belong on national television? When you're exposing boxing to the largest possible audience, you want to have something close to your best product to expose to the biggest audience. And that's not what we're seeing. I think there's some frustration on the PBC side of it that they're not allowed to televise some of their better fights on Fox. What I tried to tell people when everyone was all giddy about the Fox thing in the beginning, I said, hey, look, you know, I understand that I am a Viacom CBS employee and I'm looking at it from that lens to some degree, but objectively, Viacom CBS has an enormous amount of money, just like Fox has an enormous amount of money. They have various platforms. It's not just Showtime. Showtime is in boxing for the long haul, despite people that were, you know, I don't know, almost openly rooting it for Showtime to go out of boxing. I'm not really sure. Look, the more platforms we have in boxing, the more money that's available to boxers and to promoters, whether it's DAZN, ESPN, Showtime, Fox, the more the merrier, because one outfit can't service them all, or two. There's too much inventory and not enough money to have it like a two-shop operation. So you should want more platforms involved. But despite that, I knew that Showtime wasn't going anywhere because because Viacom CBS is invested in the sport and they were going to remain invested in the sport. And I think moving forward, we're going to see the company invest more in the sport, be it through Paramount Plus, which they're looking for live sports options on Paramount Plus, just like they're looking for in every streaming service, Peacock. You know, all these streaming services are looking for live sports content, and boxing live as a live sports content partner is cheap in comparison to everything else. I mean, certainly to the NFL, Major League Baseball, and even the lower tier sports in the United States, the NHL, MLS, it's cheap in comparison to those products. So I think that's a possibility next year. You know, Showtime will remain heavily invested in the sport. Maybe we see some fights on Paramount Plus. What has always made sense to me is to have two or three big boxing events on CBS throughout the year, because the fights that have drawn most eyeballs over the last 5 years, except for the Errol Spence fight that was right after the men's Olympic gold medal game, which was sort of an anomaly, but the fights that have drawn the most eyeballs have been on CBS because in part it's the most watched network on television, on free television. But those spots are valuable on CBS, and that's the way they look at it. So maybe there's only two or three of those types of events, but if those two or three types of events draw between 4 and 5 million viewers, they'll continue doing it and see it as a valuable investment moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, That's the unfortunate part of the last few years is that, I mean, the way it should be is every time there's a fight on CBS, Fox, on network television, it should be a big fight. You want to put your best foot forward in those types of situations. If you're a fighter, like if you're a pay-per-view fighter, you should want to be fighting on a CBS or Fox, like once a year. Like say you fight a couple times, like because that's only going to increase your exposure, which should mean dollars down the line when it comes to pay-per-view. More people get to watch you in a good fight on free TV. That some of that viewership is going to translate into people that are willing to buy you on pay-per-view. But it just hasn't been the case thus, you know, really the last couple of years where you've had, you know, showbox level fights, a lot of mismatches. I'm still got some PTSD over watching like Arislandi Lara fight a couple of times on Fox. So, you know, it's not what it could have been, not what it should have been.
Chris, in Fox's defense, when they got it right and they put the types of fights on Fox that people wanted to see, or even some, you know, B-level fights, they did well. They drew well.
They did really well, yeah.
Keith Thurman, Josecito Lopez, by no stretch of the imagination, was considered a big fight. It turned out to be a compelling fight because Keith Thurman got buzzed by a huge underdog. But that fight did like 2.8 million. I think it peaked at 2.8 million or something like that. And it was somewhere like 2.4 is the average. That's a lot of people watching what's a niche sport now. Particularly in the viewership age that has changed to the degree that it has changed. I mean, if you get 2.8 million people watching anything on television now, it's considered a success, particularly as it relates to boxing.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, anytime you can get that number of people watching, it's just going to organically translate some of these people into fans and people that want to watch these fighters more. I mean, Keith Thurman had such a great stretch before. What was it, two fights on CBS, Fox, like it was Garcia, and then before that it was Porter.
It was, yeah, those fights were both on CBS, Chris, and those were the two fights I was referring to in that.
Yeah, 5 million-ish, something?
Yeah, so the Porter fight, if I'm remembering correctly, averaged 3.1 million, and it peaked at, I want to say, 3.9 million. But that was a great action fight. Keith Thurman, Sean Porter was a very underrated fight, was one of the fights of the year in 2016. And then his next, when he fought against Danny Garcia, they peaked at over 5 million viewers, and both of those fights were on CBS. And that's what you need. I mean, like 5 million people watching a boxing match in 2022 or 2023 is unheard of. So if you can do that, even if it's just two or three times a year, it's hugely important for the sport moving forward because...
Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app. 90 seconds, all it takes. Use the code HERD. New customers bet $5. That's it, $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code HERD only on DraftKings. The crown is yours.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or in West Virginia, visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.co/bball for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms and responsible gaming resources.
This episode brought to you by 20th Century Studios' Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Director Wes Ball breathes new life into the epic franchise, set several generations after the last installment, in which apes are the dominant species. As a ruthless king attempts to build his empire at the expense of the remaining human race, a young ape will fight for the future of apes and humans alike and embark on a journey that will redefine the planet. Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Enter the kingdom in IMAX on May 10th and in theaters everywhere. Get tickets now.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
Hey guys, you know what this playground could use? A wine country, huh?
A redwood forest would be cool.
Ski slopes!
Wait!
Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.
You have to cultivate new fans in whichever way you can do it. And charging pay-per-view prices every 6 weeks, whether it's DAZN or Fox or Showtime or whatever, that is not going to be the way to do it.
Yeah, if you're a fighter, the chance to fight on free TV is something you should be desperately trying to get more of. I understand it's money talks, and boxers deserve to collect every nickel. They're out there risking their lives. They're getting punched in the head for a living, for a paycheck. But if there's a wiggle room to get on free TV, to sort of build that fan base, that is going to benefit you financially somewhere down the line. Keith, always good stuff, man. We will catch up at the next fight.
You're not coming to any fights. Cut it out.
What is next? What do we got coming up next? What am I looking
well,
at
I mean,
next?
I mean, I don't mean the fight you're broadcasting. You have to.
No, but what's the we got to do my usual. I'll be there. Yeah, then on Friday, I'm like.
Look, I'm never happier than when I see the name tag Chris Mannix next to me at the fight, because I know I can just sprawl out and do whatever I want.
Wow.
He ain't coming.
Disagree. Showtime knows I show up at some of their fights. I cancel more often than I show.
I'm going to have de Blasio keep a running list. Well, I'll get back to you.
But Keith, my intentions are pure. My intentions are pure. Intentions are to go.
I don't doubt that at all.
Keith, good to catch up, man.
Same here, Chris. Take care, man.
When we come back, my conversation with Daniel Jacobs.
Millions of Americans are getting back to work. CareerBuilder calls it the great rehire. And we want to help you get the best jobs before everyone else. CareerBuilder gives you the competitive edge to get the job you want, at the salary you want, with the benefits you want. We even send job alerts, so your perfect job lands right in your inbox. Go to CareerBuilder.com today, or get left with whatever jobs are left. Find your next job fast at CareerBuilder.com.
Look, we're all adults here, and I know some of us choose to use nicotine to relax, focus, or just unwind after a long day. Lucy is a modern oral nicotine company that makes nicotine gum, lozenges, and pouches for adults who are looking for the best, most responsible way to consume their nicotine. It's a new year. Why not start it out by switching to a new nicotine product that you can feel good about? If you enjoy using nicotine, you should definitely check out Lucy's products at lucy.co. That's lucy.co, and use the promo code BOXING at checkout. Also, I have to read this disclaimer. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical. Remember, if you're interested in a better way to use nicotine, visit lucy.co and be sure to use that promo code BOXING.
This episode is brought to you by DirecTV Stream. Introducing DirecTV Stream, the best of live TV and on demand, which means you can get all your favorite sports, movies, and shows together. So you can watch new episodes of your favorite reality shows live or binge old episodes on demand. Either way, get ready for some drama. And the best part? DirecTV Stream has no annual contract. DirecTV Stream. Get your TV together at DirecTV.com. Requires high-speed internet and compatible device. Content varies by package and location. Restrictions apply.
FanDuel Sportsbook is an official sports betting partner of Super Bowl 56. To celebrate, new customers can bet $5 to win $280 in cash on either team to win when you use the promo code BOXING when registering. That's right, you'll get your winnings in cold, hard cash, because we know cash is always better than free bets. I am leaning hard towards the Cincinnati Bengals and Joe Burrow, mostly because I'm just a believer that this Joe Burrow ride is going to continue. Tom Brady's retired. Joe Burrow might be the next Tom Brady. That's why I'm betting on him. I love watching the Super Bowl with friends, family, hanging out at the house. Watching on the big screen is one of the better experiences of the sporting year. Go onto the app and see which prop bets you would also like to bet on. They can be the color of the Gatorade or just a regular touchdown prop. There's no better place to bet Super Bowl 56 than FanDuel Sportsbook. Promotions for new and existing customers. They've got same game parlays when you can combine small bets for bigger wins. Tons of Super Bowl props and much more. Don't miss your chance to turn $5 into $280 in cash. Download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and use the promo code BOXING to make every moment more this Super Bowl. Again, promo code BOXING exclusively on FanDuel Sportsbook. Danny, I want to start here with you being off for almost 15 months. You fight in November of 2020, no fights in 2021. What was the reason you were inactive for all of 21?
Well, we were scheduled to have a world title fight with Joe Smith, but he was had to fight his mandatory, so we had to pull out. So we had several fights that just got pushed off. We was right on schedule with having fights lined up, but it just so happened that everything just kind of fell out last minute, which led us to having a long, long layoff.
When the Rosado fight ended, like, was your immediate reaction, I got to get back out there to kind of wash that away? Did you need time after that fight? Like, what was your reaction to how that fight went?
No, it was just assessing myself, really, just seeing what I can go back and do better. And I took from that it was a mental thing mostly. Being in a good space, a good mental space. And I attest that to, having my old team back, which I'm thankful for now, because training camp has been tremendous. And I feel like I'm back to mentally where I used to be, if not stronger, because I know that when lacking the right type of mentality, what could happen. And so I'm just looking forward to Saturday night, because now I get a chance to, prove all along who I truly am and what I get to display when I'm 100%.
Did you feel like going into that Rosado fight that something was off mentally? Because there was a lot of trash talk between you two. It seemed like it was going to be a rowdy fight, but could you feel a little off going into it?
Yeah, I remember, I guess a lot of things in my personal life was just kind of off. And, I just remember getting there. Even on, the zone cameras, I remember saying, I just want to get in and get out. I just want to get this over with. So mentally, I just wasn't present. And it was apparent. Mm-hmm.
And you just said, like, getting your old team back together. That includes your trainer, Andre Rozier, was with you through all of
Andre Rozier, Anthony Irons, mm-hmm. Scooter Honig, mm-hmm. The whole New York team that kind of molded me to be the fighter who people truly know. And so now that that's back, I'm looking forward to showing everybody Saturday night.
So how did you guys get back together? What were those conversations like?
Well, I mean, as family, you handle things indoors, in privacy, as men, as family. I won't disclose those type of conversations because it's for us, but we're in a great space now. And it's all love.
So being back with that group, like, what's the difference in you? What's changed now that you're back with that group?
Just, I guess my spirit, the spirit of being happy every day and training and look forward to going to the gym, look forward to performing, look forward to, because boxing is kind of related to my childhood since I've been boxing since I was a kid. So, the same team that I had when I was a kid, it's kind of like that same energy, that same vibe. But when you're in a totally different space, from training somewhere you never trained before to doing certain things you've never done before, it just mentally kind of depresses you. Secretly, it was doing it to me. And I guess it truly wasn't apparent it was apparent during sparring. It was apparent, for a lot of the sessions that I had by myself, it was apparent. But, now I'm just looking forward to really just not showing to the world, but showing to myself, because that's really truly what it all boils down to, because I'm in there risking my life. And so I want to be able to prove to myself that, I am what I say I am.
You are a two-time world champion, an accomplished guy, but in a weird way, does this fight feel like you have to kind of prove yourself all over again?
It's crazy how in boxing, you can being such an elite fighter and so well respected, to one fight, people can say he's lost it. People can say, this is the do or die for him. I mean, come on, you got to put some respect on my name. Mm-hmm. I done been in there with the best. I done beat some of the best, controversial or not. I mean, I am one of the best fighters in the world, and that alone deserves some respect. But I get people's opinion. It's just so crazy to me how it could be wishy-washy one day. And then let's say I go on and knock John Ryder out, then coming Saturday night, then everyone's going to be like, he was supposed to do that. And then you got to have some people that can say, oh, now he's back. So it's just like sometimes boxers and critics can be so not understanding and just so brash. And, you know, it's very harmful to some fighters. But to me, I take it with a grain of salt. I'm my biggest critic. The only opinion that matters to me is myself.
I think one of the criticisms you've heard, and it goes back to that old like Marvin Hagler line, right? It's hard to run in silk pajamas or whatever that I'm paraphrasing there. Like you've had a lot of success. You've made a lot of money. Do you feel like you have the same edge that you had coming up?
1,000%, because money doesn't define me. Money isn't something that is do all be all for me. I do boxing because I love it. I do boxing because it's fun to me. I do boxing because it's something that, you know, I don't feel like it's a job. And so when people say the paraphrase that you just mentioned, it's pointless to me because people don't truly know me. But those who know me understand that none of those things truly matter to me. It's important. It's important for me to take care of my family and, you know, to do things that I've always wanted to do. But money is not my God. Let's make that clear.
Fighting above 160 pounds once again when you were you a middleweight champion, how much more comfortable are you at this weight?
Man, 100%.
You look better. You look better. You're not like in that old 160-pound Danny that was struggling to get
exactly.
down.
Exactly, shivering and shaking because I had to do the bath trick where I lost 15 pounds in a couple hours, you know? So the stress of that just really takes your fighter and plundles them, whether it's their confidence, whether it's their physical abilities, so many different things. And now that I've avoided all those things by moving up and being in a comfortable space, I mean, I've been on weight the entire camp. It's almost surprising. You know, even at one point I had to gain a little bit of weight, which I never had to do for camp. So it's a beautiful thing. It's a blessing to be comfortable and not to try to make weight to try to fit in some type of narrative. You know, I get the big fights was at 160 at one point in my career. But now that I've moved up, I realize that, you know, it's not really the fighters. It's just, you know, it's me being myself because you're going to be judged regardless. Right.
You know, John Ryder is not an easy comeback opponent, a southpaw. He's very good at fighting on the inside. We saw what he did with Callum Smith a couple of years ago. That was a tremendous performance by him. When John Ryder was presented to you as your next opponent, what was your reaction?
Well, he wasn't presented to me as my next opponent. He was one of the options that I had a list of, and I chose John Ryder simply because I knew that he would bring it. But let's make this clear. I am not Callum Smith. I am none of the fighters that he has ever fought. So you can't really compare, you know, some of his opponents to me. I thought John Ryder was a perfect fight for Callum Smith because Callum Smith doesn't really have a good inside game as far as fighting on the inside, having guys pushing back. I mean, Canelo truly exposed him as well. So whereas me, I pretty much, in my opinion, I can do it all. I can fight inside, I can fight outside, I can switch, I can bang, you know, I can do it all. And so there's very few, if any, flaws in my game when it comes to stepping in there Saturday night. And it's gonna be apparent. So I'm just looking forward to displaying my skills, but you cannot compare me to anyone that he's ever fought.
You fought in a lot of big places, New York, Vegas, California. First time fighting in the UK. How have you felt kind of being over there, you know, during this fight week, and how comfortable do you feel you're going to be going into a fight on an enemy territory, I guess?
Well, to be quite honest, I think the main reason why I chose this fight was because it was in England. I don't even think it really had anything to do with John Ryder, even though I respect him as a fighter. It mostly has something to do with the experience because I've always wanted to fight in London or in the UK as a professional. And so when I heard the different options, I jumped on it as soon as I heard it because I thought it would be a great idea. And also because I thought that John Ryder would push and come and that would be able to really give the fans a good show and allow us to really display our skills style-wise. And so Yeah, I'm looking forward to the energy in the crowd, whether or not they're rooting for me or not. I mean, we've seen how I performed before where, you know, 98% of the crowd was for the other opponent. And yeah, that turned out to be an interesting story. But, you know, I believe that this would be a different turnout in terms of how the fans would treat me. Not saying that I'll have everyone in there cheering for me, but at the same time, I don't think that it'll be something that'll harm me. I think it'll be something that'll motivate me and boost me because, you know, going from fighting my last fight with no fans in the crowd to fighting with a sold out crowd here in London, where I've always wanted to perform, man, it truly motivates me and excites me. And that walkout is going to be very special.
You mentioned just a minute ago that you were looking to fight Joe Smith last year. He's, of course, 175-pounder title holder. Do you look at your future as, like, whatever the big fight is, 168, 175, if you win this fight, you'll go wherever?
Well, I won't say that. I'll just say that's just kind of where we were presented with at that particular time. Mm-hmm. And my ultimate goal is to be a Hall of Fame fighter. And so as I'm making that transition into coming back into boxing from a long layover, my sights as far as how to conclude, you know, such a long and successful career, my ultimate goal is to be a Hall of Famer. So what fight does make sense for me? Obviously, it's on my focus and it's on the forefront. But I trust my team. I trust what they have inside for me, the insights. You know, I'll let them do that part. My job is to stay focused and to stay ready. And we have our team back together 100%, so I don't have any issues whatsoever.
Just last thing for you, what do you think cements your status as a Hall of Fame fighter? Is it another title, another weight class? Is it a specific win? What gets you there?
In my opinion, because it's always opinions, I think you can never truly say, you know, what exactly would do it, but I definitely would say becoming a two-division world champion and possibly getting another one of those big fights that people respect the opponent. And they probably see the fight as a 50-50 fight. And or even the fighter beating me, because remember, I'm stepping up in weight classes. And, you know, I'm fighting guys that weigh me out by at least 15, 20 pounds, whereas people used to say I was taking advantage of the little guys in the middleweight division when I was actually their weight. So, I mean, we'll have to see what the future presents, but it all starts with Saturday night.
Yeah, no question about it. Danny, good luck on Saturday. It's going to be a fun atmosphere. Good to have you back, and thanks for a few minutes.
Thank you very much.
Time now for this week's picks brought to you by FanDuel. And if you aren't betting with me yet, what are you waiting for? I'm now 7-1 since I started making picks on this podcast. I was 2-for-2 last week picking Keith Thurman to win and picking him to win by decision. That's after calling correctly the Mark Megsayo upset over Gary Russell Jr. This week, I am zeroed in on Daniel Jacobs against John Ryder, 168-pound title elimination fight over in the UK. Jacobs has not fought since November of 2020, and that gave me some reason for pause because John Ryder is a lot better than his record suggests. He went to the mat with Callum Smith in a terrific fight a couple of fights ago and has won two fights since then. Still, I am going with Daniel Jacobs by decision. Jacobs has reunited with his former trainer, Andre Rogier. They have had a long, full camp together. There is, I think, a reinvigoration in Daniel Jacobs, who knows that this fight is win or go home. I don't think Jacobs has the power at 168 pounds to stop John Ryder, but I do think he wins a fairly comfortable decision, even going into John Ryder territory in the UK to do it. So Jacobs, by decision. That's it for this week's episode. My thanks to Keith Idek and Daniel Jacobs for joining the show. As always, subscribe, rate, review this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you download podcasts. And I'll see you next week.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Our kids have said to us since we've moved to Minnesota, we are far more active than we've ever been anywhere else we've ever lived.
Moving to Minnesota opened up a lot of doors for us.
Just this overall sense of community, of values that, you know, Minnesotans have.
It's a real accepting, loving community, especially with two young kids.
See what makes Minnesota the Star of the North. New residents share why they love calling it home at exploreminnesota.com/live.
Refinancing your car at Kemba Financial Credit Union can get you quick access to cash to help manage high rate debts and expenses. Get up to $500 next day cash back, plus no payments for 90 days, and take cash equity out. Make your car work for you and drive away with extra cash. Apply at Kemba.org. Restrictions apply. Offer ends April 30th, 2024. Federally insured by NCUA.
This festival and concert season will be all about the boots, and Dakovas is your stop before attending your next concert. All Dakovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Dakovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. Stop by your local Dakovas store, have a complimentary drink, and shop new styles. I love it. If you can't make it to a store, just visit Dakovas.com. Stores are great, but it's TECOVAS.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.